America's founders chose to not allow a state church at the national level. A great decision. There would be no Church of America like there was a Church of England to which all citizens must conform. Historically, it was understood that the meaning of the First Amendment when it begins, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, that meant no state church at the national level. But in the middle of the last century, the Supreme Court changed the meaning of the notion of the Establishment Clause to a strict separation of church and state. Is that what the Founding Fathers intend? Certainly a lot of legal scholars say, no, that's not true. Dr. Gregory P. Seltz, the executive director of the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty, fights for religious liberty in America out of his Washington, D.C.-based office. Dr. Gregory Seltz is the speaker emeritus on the Lutheran Hour, and he joins us now on Vocal Point to discuss church-state relations in America. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Dr. Seltz, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
My pleasure to be with you too, Jerry.
Sure.
Great to be here.
All right. So let's start with your thoughts on just the opening of the First Amendment. I'll read just the religious part. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Those words were eventually, unfortunately, twisted to mean a strict separation or wall of separation between church and state. What did the founders actually intend by it, based on your understanding of history?
Well, just read them. They'll tell you. I mean, when you hear of John Quincy Adams talking about the indissolvable bond between Christianity and government, they were more concerned about the government's intrusion into the areas of conscience. And so you're exactly right. This was just so that there was no federally established church, state church, because you had all these Christians of different denominations, and there was a freedom of conscience that they did not want Christianity to come under the coercive power of the government. So that's that. But the idea of separation, it really should be differentiation of church and state. And the founders valued the church above all. The state was a necessary evil, if you will. And, you know, just for people to turn it around and say that today the state is what the founders wanted and they wanted to expunge the church from public life, that's absolutely a lie.
So if you use the word differentiation of
right.
church and state, then we avoid these problems and we're much more historically accurate.
Correct. I think so, because, again, when people say separation of church and state, my first point is I say, oh, I didn't know you were a Christian. And they go, what are you talking about? I said, well, that idea of both of them being legal entities, public entities, but differentiated, that goes back to Jesus in Matthew 22, where he says, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. And later on, he even tells Pilate himself, you have a very limited role in the world. And so, you know, Romans 13 then finally says the state's role is to just punish the bad guys. And that's finally how the founders thought of the coercive power of the federal government. Limit it, give it explicit things that it's supposed to do, and keep it in its place. And then let free people, religious people, self-governing people, accomplish their lives to the glory of God and the service of neighbor. And that was the American experiment.
You know, it's so interesting. I, as we're having this discussion, I can remember a few years ago when Trump was the president, and there was some sort of man who was a Christian who was appointed to something by the Trump administration, and Bernie Sanders was
right.
raking him over the coals in the Senate, and basically he was asking him theological questions along the lines of, you know, is it true? You said in this article way back when that Jesus is the only way to God. Do you hold that view? And this, you know, he said, Senator, with yeah. all due respect, you know, that my religion teaches me, blah, blah, blah. Is that your view? Yes, that's my
yeah.
view. Well, this man should not be serving in the government. He has the, you know, views that are out of place with the American people. You know, Mr. Chairman, I vote against this nominee. And it's like, wait a minute. The Congress, yeah, I mean, the Constitution even says, hey, there's going to be no religious tests for somebody, you know, serving in the government.
I go even further than that because I use that example. I said, how should we respond? Well, we're the ones that differentiate church and state. We're the ones who don't elect a president to preach the gospel. The gospel is completely separated. Things of conscience are completely protected from the coercive power of the state. And so when Bernie Sanders says, can you serve all constituencies? The answer to that is, well, my religion, the ultimate truth of my religion has nothing to do with the state, and that the Savior, Jesus, says that I should love all people. So yes, sir, when it comes to the limited role of the state, I can serve all of my constituencies. You, Mr. Sanders, you only serve those who vote for you. And so, again, he's bound more to his constituents only than a Christian is. And so, again, to not just – I remember that exchange, and I said, we've got to do better of answering that by actually putting that nonsense in its place. It's not that we are motivated to serve less people by our faith. Our faith motivates us to serve more people than they do. And so that, again, just shows how out of whack it is, and that's why our founders did not want a religious test, because that was not the realm of state. They shouldn't be discussing that. They should fill potholes like the limited role they were given to do. Well, and I use that metaphor.
but the fact is, the idea that Bernie Sanders and people like that feel that, right, you know, that effectively, you know, the founders wanted us to have state sanctioned atheism or something like that, you know, is totally out of line with our history.
And I would challenge him to say, what motivates you to serve your constituents beyond who, those who voted for you? I can tell you the Christian faith is what motivates us to serve all people, the way God would serve us. And I don't see that kind of motivation in any, look at the atheistic regimes of the last 100 years. Look at what they did to people who didn't, toe the line. They executed them. They murdered them. And so, again, the most tolerant nation in the world is tolerant. Why? Because of its Christian foundations.
Yeah, speaking of Bernie Sanders, you mentioned other nations such as the Soviet Union. I mean, you didn't mention it by name, but the mind goes to that. That's where Bernie Sanders had his honeymoon. So,
yeah. Now, well, like I said, they're the ones that have to explain why the regimes that followed their supposedly more benevolent form of government killed 110 plus million of their own citizens. Again, before we have any discussion about what's the best way to serve everybody, our faith motivates us to serve all people, honestly and justly. And if you get involved in government, that should be your greatest motivation.
Senator Feinstein, when she was of sound mind, she tried to rake Amy Coney Barrett over the coals before she was nominated to the Supreme Court, to a lower court. And what Senator Feinstein said so famously, I can see, Judge, that the dogma lives deep within you. Again, the idea is if you're religious, you need not apply. And that's that doesn't fit in America.
Well, it's even worse than that. I was trying to remember now. He was the labor secretary under Clinton.
Robert Reich.
Robert Reich. You know, that quote that he had in that op-ed where he basically said, terrorists may disrupt and destroy, but basically Christians are the greatest enemy we faced in the 21st century, or the churches. And you just get to there and say, what are you guys talking about? Look at the foundations of this country. But again, we have to different – this is where it bothers me that we let them control the language. We say you can't legislate your faith. Well, Christians – differentiate their faith from the role of the moral role of government. And so again, the whole point is all law is moral based. All law is based in moral teachings. We have every right to debate the morals that are foundational to the laws that actually bind us. And so this notion, they create this notion that we're trying to legislate the proclaiming of Jesus Christ as Savior from the government. We're like, that the government has nothing to do with that. That's the freedom of people in their churches to proclaim and to care for their neighbor without coercion. In fact, religious liberty is just keeping that kind of conversation free from the coercion of the federal government. That was the main thing the founders were worried about. And I will tell you, these secularists, they want that coercive power for their secular Puritanism.
Well, in the example of sexual anarchy, I mean, there's a new sexual orthodoxy, and if you disagree with that, for example, if you disagree right. with same-sex marriage, or you disagree with transgender surgery, even for kids and so forth, then somehow, you know, you're a bigot and, you know, society should punish you.
Yeah, and think of all the laws that are going to go away with this. I mean, you know, you have the age of consent for sexual relations and these things. All of that stuff's going to be stripped away. The protection of our girls, the differentiation of boys.
You mean if they get away with it, if they succeed.
But again, people need to understand they are getting away with it by using these euphemistic phrases. They're actually removing protections from those that are most vulnerable. I mean, again, even with the abortion debate, we're celebrating the killing of children now. We're not just saying safe, legal, and rare. We're actually lighting up the Empire State Building pink to kill babies even after the day they're born, after the ninth month. Finally, we got to finally say, is this the kind of government, is this the kind of state-sanctioned violence you want to see in your country? And that's the kind of thing we're actually challenging people. We have a right and a responsibility to engage these moral issues because we're not legislating our faith. We're legislating human behavior. And by the way, we're not the ones who are advocating laws against, you know, they're deciding what your conscience is saying. We're saying the government doesn't do well, you know, arresting people for conscience issues. They do better just arresting you for bad actions. And so, again, I think we're the kinder, gentler people for all people.
Well, you mentioned a few times in this discussion language and words right. and so forth. And that's true. Words help frame the debate and so forth. In fact, there's the old phrase, whoever frames the debate wins the debate.
Yeah. For one, controls one, them.
Yeah, whoever controls the language. Same idea, yeah. One word that troubles me, because it's just not true, is the word progressive.
Right.
You know, I'm serious. It's like, right. maybe that's a word that we ought to respond to or something. And it's just kind of correct. Like, you know, I never liked the phrase pro-choice because it's like, well, first of all, more than 60% of the women who have abortions felt that they were forced to have one. They felt that they didn't have any other choice. And of course, the baby 100% of the time has no choice.
Yeah, and I was even Vicky Haley, just to make sure we pick on both sides, came out and she again made the abortion debate men versus women, like we're the ones that are advocating for life and women are telling us to get lost. And it's really the most misogynistic thing you can do. Throw $200 at a young girl and say that's my level of involvement with my child. $200 and you make the decision. And again, where did all that come from? It didn't come from men, because those of us who are honorable men say you need to stand up for your family, you need to protect your family, you need to honor your wives, you need to honor your girlfriends and your children. And so again, the idea that our notion is somehow misogynistic, I was like, okay, and that's the same argument that's being used, this egalitarian argument of Billie Jean King is now the same argument being used for transgenders to destroy women's sports. We're the ones who've been protectors all along, and I think it's about time we start taking back the language. Progressives regress on these things. They regress to the mean, or actually below the mean, which is might and right and treating each other as less than human. That's not progressive.
And you mentioned Billie Jean King, and I think of Megan Rapinoe, right. or whatever, you know, where, okay, it's my understanding that when women's sports, even, you know, women athletes, even very accomplished ones, when they compete seriously against male counterparts, they do not win. And that's why these males who are claiming to be female and they're competing in women's sports, they're winning all over the place. So you'd think somebody like Billie Jean King or Megan Rapinoe would say, you know, that's not fair. We need basic fairness. We have about 30 seconds to wrap this stuff.
We need to differentiate again. So proper differentiating of government so that the church is free to actually motivate us to our best. Same thing with differentiating male and female. When you start to actually look at proclaiming the foundational truths of the Bible, you get more liberty for everybody and you get a humanity that's humane. And so I think we're even the true humanists too.
All right. Greg Seltz, the website is lcrlfreedom.org. Dr. Seltz, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Great to be with you.
Okay, great. Bye-bye now.